This week, we welcome Alex Wood, Chief Information Security Officer at Pulte Financial Services, in the leadership discussion, When Getting Fired is Good for Your Career, Using Experiments to Launch New Products, Why Aligning IT with Business Goals is Key, and more. Business Security Weekly starts now.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show where we explore the business of security to improve the security of business. Your trusted source for actionable insights on leadership, communication, and innovation. Get ready for Business Security Weekly. Today's determined attackers easily bypass even the most advanced network defenses. Trying to ramp up staff to detect their backdoors can cost thousands of dollars and take months, even years. With Active Countermeasures AI Hunter, we enable junior analysts to detect even the most advanced backdoors in a matter of hours. Sign up for a demo and purchase our product today by visiting activecountermeasures.com/BSW. Active Countermeasures. Make every analyst a hunter. Rapid7 powers the practice of SecOps. Using shared data, analytics, and automated workflows, SecOps unites IT, DevOps, and security teams to make security an outcome of innovation. Rapid7 combines technology, expertise, and advocacy to drive vulnerability management, application security, incident detection, and log management for more than 7,000 organizations worldwide. Power up your SecOps practice with a free trial at rapid7.com/securityweekly. Do you have a website, an external presence, employees, an office? Any of these things can be compromised and attacked. How are you defending your assets? Have you penetration tested your public assets? Start 2018 by taking a proactive approach to securing your vulnerable areas. Black Hills Information Security has been helping companies find their weaknesses since 2008. Email consulting at blackhillsinfosec.com and see how they can help you sleep better at night.
Welcome to Business Security Weekly. This is episode number 105, recorded November 5th, 2018. I am your host, Matt Alderman, here from Colorado, joined by my co-host, Paul Asadorian, in G-Unit Studio in Rhode Island. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Matt. It's good to be here as we make the transition from our former regular host, Mr. Michael Santarcangelo, who will still be participating in the show and working with us. Matt has stepped into this role to help out on a regular basis with Business Security Weekly and as the CEO for Security Weekly, as I will be the CTO. I'm imagining, Matt, at the beginning of the next segment, we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I saved it for the second segment until after we get through our guest interview and do it as part of the leadership discussion. All right, join us for our webcast with Signal Sciences entitled, Which Way Should You Shift Testing in the SDLC? This webcast will be held November 8th from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern. Go to securityweekly.com/signalsciences to register now. All right. I would like to welcome Alex Wood, who's the Chief Information Security Officer at Pulte Financial Services. Alex has over 18 years of experience in information security and more than 22 years in IT. Alex has served as director on the International Board of the Information Systems Security Association, is the past president of the ISSA Denver chapter. Alex is also co-host of the Colorado Equal Security podcast, which I have participated on before. Alex, welcome to Business Security Weekly.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate you guys having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so I was going back and trying to think about how long have we known each other? We're both here in Colorado. And I remember the event, but I don't remember the year. I was doing an ISSA session up north. Yeah. I think you were still with AT&T at the time. So that was probably, what, 6-8 years ago?
Yeah, something like that. It would have been somewhere between 2008, 2012 in that area. I remember it as well because it was a January event. And we had a great snowstorm the day before, and we were actually wondering if anybody was going to show up. And we were glad that you showed up since you were speaking. So that was definitely
fun. Well, it's, you know, when you live in Colorado, you have to be prepared for the weather. So yes, I'm always prepared to make sure I make it to my meeting. So that's good. So I asked Alex to come on. You know, I've done the Colorado Equals Security podcast as an audio podcast. I think that was earlier this year. Alex, yep. We did that or late last year. And I thought it would be great to bring on a chief information security officer onto the show. and really kind of walk through a couple different pieces, kind of your career, your current role, some of the challenges you face as a CISO. And when I look at our backgrounds, we're similar. I started in IT back in the nuclear power days. I went to security, but my path is very different from yours in where I ended up. So give us a quick overview kind of your career and how you ended up where you are today with Pulte.
Sure. So I kind of fell into security like a lot of people by accident. I began my career in IT in general. I moved out to Colorado and I kind of didn't know what I was going to do with myself. And I'd always been a computer guy, spent a lot of time on computers growing up, but I hadn't gone into like computer science in college because I was just not a big fan of the higher level math. And back then, that's kind of what computer science was. It was a lot more math and a little bit of computers. So I actually got a degree in chemistry and then realized, well, maybe I don't want to do anything with this. So moved out here to Colorado, got sort of an entry-level IT job. And then one of the guys I was working with moved over. I was at IBM, and he moved over to the managed security services group there to do pen testing. And I had never heard of it before, and it just kind of blew my mind that somebody would get paid to do that. And so I kept my eyes open for other openings in that group, got in as a security operations role, actually one of the first security operations folks for IBM MSS back in the day. We started up their security operations center. We ran 24/7, but we had three people to run 24/7. So I was the day shift. There was another guy that was second shift, and then another person that was third shift. So it was pretty amazing kind of getting into the ground floor there and did a bunch of stuff with the managed security services group there. Eventually, IBM, I say that they sold me to AT&T. There's always been a funny relationship between IBM and AT&T. And you know, one day I worked for IBM, the next day I worked for AT&T, kind of doing the same thing. But spent a little more time at AT&T, and then kind of realized I'd spent my career working at these giant corporations, and kind of felt like I wanted to go somewhere else and try and have a little bit more impact. So I left there and was lucky enough to land with an oil and gas company here in Denver, starting their security program. So I got to kind of build that from the ground up, and that was really my entry into running a security program. So learned a lot there, had a good time doing that. Moved on from there, went to a healthcare company, spent a little time doing risk management for them. And then the opportunity here at Pulte opened up, and I managed to get this CISO role. And I've been here for the past approximately 3 years running the security program. So it's been great. I really enjoy the leadership parts of security, building a program, managing a program, doing that sort of stuff. It's been really exciting.
Now, Alex, when you had me nervous when you said you got your degree in chemistry and then went to Colorado, I'm really glad you didn't say you were making like illegal drugs instead of getting a job in IT.
It would have been New Mexico, right, at that time.
Right, thought, yes.
cooking some stuff up or that sort of thing. But no, I kind of stayed away from that. Figured I'd maybe go down the legal path as opposed to.
That's good. We're glad. Which brings you here today, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have now everything, almost everything's now legal
in Colorado.
We were the first ones to do it here in Colorado. So, that's interesting, right? Because there's a lot of people that think I'm an analyst in a SOC running, managed service environment or just sitting in the SOC managing. And here you are, CISO of, one of the largest home builders in the United States. You're on the financial services side of that business, because of the mortgage and insurance and some of the other things in that business. So I think that's a great story because anybody can start anywhere, even without an IT or security degree, and end up becoming a chief information security officer, which is, this is why I wanted to bring you on to tell that story, because so many of us think that, we have to start in a certain place or have a certain degree to get to this level. It's not really true.
No, I totally agree. And I think some of the best folks that I've worked with or that have worked for me are the ones that didn't come up with security in mind necessarily, right? It was more of a mindset for them, and then eventually transitioned into doing something related to security. I see now there are lots of programs out there to, get your degree in cybersecurity, or other things like that. And, you know, we do internships here, and I find a lot talking to people that are getting a degree in those sorts of areas that they don't have a lot of the experience that I want them to have. Yeah, they're going to come out with, you know, some knowledge about concepts for security and maybe, you know, information about tools or other things like that. But I mean, I learned most of my stuff by playing around and understanding the IT environment and what was going on. And that really, I think, led me to be better at security because I understood the base of IT and the things that were going on there. You have somebody that just goes to school for security and they miss out on a lot of that stuff. So I honestly think, you know, having that passion for security, not necessarily a degree or specific training in it coming up, I think really helps people.
Well, and I think a lot of folks feel like they need an MBA. Is that a common path? And what's your thoughts on that, Alex?
Yeah, I think it can be helpful. But it, you know, just like when any other schooling, I think it's pretty expensive. So I personally don't have one. I think you can learn a lot of the same concepts that you would get by getting an official MBA, through reading, through, you know, online they have, you know, basically you can get, you know, sort of free MBA. It's not actually a degree, but you know, that sort of training now. Also I think if you step up and you're willing to work on the more business type engagements throughout your career, it's going to help you as well. Learn about how budgeting and finances work. Learn about the planning processes. Learn about all that sort of thing within your organization because that stuff is happening. And that's what you're going to learn when you get an MBA. But you know, a lot of times the technical folks, IT folks, they don't want anything to do with that. They want to, you know, strictly, you know, be hands on keyboard and, you know, only do that sort of thing. I think you need to make sure that you try and stretch yourself and get more well-rounded. Doesn't necessarily have to be an MBA. But if you're the type of person that needs, you know, some sort of goal like that to be focused, then sure. I think that you can get a lot of great information from getting an MBA or some other kind of business degree.
Yeah. And I think that's an important thing that people have to understand in the CISO role is you have to understand the breadth of not only the technology, but I think understanding how that aligns to the business, right? I think you see now you being more engaged with the business and therefore you have to understand aspects of how the business runs in order to be effective in your role as a CISO as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. Again, sort of coming up, I think people were doing security for security's sake in a lot of times. And I think you saw this with security professionals, people would be frustrated that security wasn't being taken seriously. Well, I think a lot of times we weren't being taken seriously because we didn't understand what the business was actually doing. So, you know, when we said we want to implement, you know, some firewall rule or we wanted to, you know, stop this or that, we didn't understand that was really, you know, preventing the business from doing something. So, you know, my motto is always you want to, you know, enable your business to operate securely. You don't necessarily want to do security for security's sake. And I think one of the areas that I've really sort of started to love was around risk management. When I, you know, my last job, I was in a risk management organization. And I think that really helped me connect more with, you know, what it was that risk really means and, you know, how it is that relates to the organization. And, you know, also with my job here, you know, I talk to the business all the time. I am out there trying to figure out what is important to them, what it is that, you know, essentially makes our business run, and then figuring out how it is that on the IT side and the information side, how is it that happens? And, you know, once I know that, it makes it a lot easier for us to figure out what it is that's most important to try and secure.
Right. And you and I have had lots of conversations about metrics and alignment of metrics and some of the things you have to report up to your executive team to really kind of measure that alignment of the business goals with some of the things you're doing on the security side as well. Which I think is really important for CISOs to understand, right? There is a risk component here that has to be addressed. And I know you've done some work on the metric side to help kind of measure aspects of that. Can you kind of give some folks an overview of some of the things you've done, a little bit of a high level of how you kind of build those metrics and kind of report those up?
Sure. Yeah. So I think, you know, with many security programs, you start with a framework, just so that you can have a baseline to figure out, you know, what is the universe of things that you want to do, you know, sort of from a control standpoint. You know, so whether that is, you know, ISO 27000, this cybersecurity framework, SANS top 20, you know, whatever it is that, you know, it might be, you have to have, you know, somewhere that you want to start, just so you can understand the, you know, all of the pieces that are out there. Then you need to figure out what it is in those that you are going to be very good at, right? So unless you're required to be, say, certified for ISO 27000, you're probably not going to be great at every single one of those controls. So then it's figuring out which of those is the most important to you as it relates to the risks to your business. And then, you know, implementing some, you know, specific controls, the things that you're actually doing on a day-to-day basis to instantiate those pieces of the framework. And so when we do that, you're taking, you know, each one of those specific controls that you're doing, and you want to measure it, right? You want to know if you're doing a good job at it. So each one of those specific controls should have some kind of measure and metric that goes along with it. I think that scares people sometimes because it's not easy to have good metrics around everything like that. But it doesn't always have to be, you know, extremely detailed either, right? I try and do a couple of metrics around each one of the controls. One of those is essentially a metric to show that the control is actually operating in the way that it should be. Like you're actually doing the things you need to do for that control to work. And then sort of a second metric, which is, you know, making sure that it is actually working effectively, right? So are you driving the metric in the way that it needs to go, more like, you know, a key performance indicator or something like that? So I think some of these can be very simple. Some of them can be more complex. I think also, you know, people get wrapped around the axle too, trying to make sure that they get it perfect. I think, you know, starting somewhere and measuring to see what you're doing and if you're getting better, and then continually refining those to make sure that it is accurately reflecting what it is that you're really doing. So I think that's really helpful in making sure that you're measuring what's going on in your program. And then of course, once you've got that, it's really easy to take those metrics, communicate them, whether it's up or down or peers, whatever it might be. You've got all this data about what it is that you're doing and how you're getting better. So it's great to share that with others in the organization.
And then I would imagine aspects of that also helps you drive kind of your priorities and budget for the next year. Because, you know, based on how, you know, if you're making improvements in certain areas, but you're falling behind in others, that would influence where some of your projects and budgets for the previous or for the next year would come into play. Can you give us a kind of an overview of some of the areas, at least from your perspective, kind of where are some of your big challenges in the CISO role today? What are some of those emerging challenges that you're trying to get your arms around?
Yeah, so I think you mentioned emerging challenges. I think it's kind of on both ends of the spectrum, right? There's always something new, whether that is cloud or DevOps or artificial intelligence or blockchain or, you know, whatever it is, the buzzword for the day that's coming up that's new that your business might be exploring. You know, making sure that you're staying on top of that so that when your business starts exploring those particular things, you can help direct them in the right way to be secure. But then on the other end of the spectrum too, you always have the stuff that's lagging, right? Your legacy items, your technical debt, all the things that it's not sexy to go out and fix. If I've had a system that's been sitting around forever and nothing has happened because of that, well then, you know, why is it that we need to fix it? It's not causing anybody any problem. But again, that goes back to the risk question too, right? So if, the longer that you have that old system, likely the larger the risk is going to get. So helping to communicate how that risk is growing and obviously just because there is a risk doesn't mean that you need to fix it, but at some point it's going to be big enough where if you haven't gotten someone to take a look at it and try and fix it before, Now that risk is great enough where you're going to have to go in and get somebody to take care of it. And I think that tail on the low end, it's a super long tail. And you always have to stay on top of it. I think from the business side, people are always talking about driving value, and it's easy to show the value in the new stuff that you put out. It's a lot harder to show the value in the old stuff that you're getting rid of.
Yeah, that's interesting, right? As we think about it from our budgeting perspective, we think, okay, we've done those things, and maybe we don't have to do them anymore because it's not the new cool stuff, but it still has to be done because there's still potential risk in those areas that have to be resolved. It's always interesting. So any specific solutions or areas you're looking at today on the Pulte side, just to give the listeners some of the things that you're kind of looking into right now?
Yeah, you know, talking about both ends of it again, you know, we're pretty traditional in the way that we operate. So I guess in one respect, I get a little leeway from some of the really cutting edge stuff. But I think along with most people, we're investigating how we can better secure cloud stuff, whether that be, CASB or the process around DevOps and CI/CD and other things like that, leading edge sort of things like that. We do have, public facing web apps. So there's always the web app security component, making sure that we're staying on top of all the changes that happen there. And, you know, all, whether it's new or not, all the crazy changing acronyms for all of the different web app security technologies. And then also, again, the not sexy stuff. It's going back and making sure that we are still getting better at that stuff that is sitting around, that's been there for a while, whether that is being more proactive about the security of unstructured data. I think that stuff tends to stay around longer than it needs to. And so, you know, getting better governance around that, whether it's looking at our specific internal applications and trying to keep an eye on, how could someone illegitimately use this to potentially, get information out of it. You know, we've got a lot of sensitive information from our customers, and, making sure that we're good stewards of that is, a really high priority for us. So I think those are a few things on both ends. Plus we've got similar challenges to other folks, making sure that we can manage the solutions that we already have effectively with the team that we have, making sure the solutions we already have are still effective. Do we need to replace something? Do we need to look at a different vendor? Do we need to, add something else in addition to it? We made the switch a couple of years ago to a next-gen endpoint protection, but there's lots of other solutions that are, more traditional that we have in place as well that we could look at potentially moving to something, quote, next-gen.
Alex, what's been an effective method and process to measure security in your organization? Because when I think of, vulnerability management, attack simulation, third-party risk management, they're all various measurements, but like what actually works to measure what's effective and what's not in your environment?
So I think, it boils down to risk, right? And I think people still have a hard time talking about risk when it comes to security. A lot of times people say risk and they really mean vulnerability. They might say risk and they mean threat. They might mean lots of things when they say risk. But really looking at that risk from a business standpoint, right? It is some negative event that could happen to your organization. And then, how likely and how big that risk is. So no matter what the solution is, it's got to, either contain or drive down that risk somehow. So I think that's the biggest thing, is tying everything back to that risk. I don't think anybody does risk management very well. I'll often talk to people and it's, I'll ask, hey, what's your biggest risk? And somebody will say something, oh, my biggest risk is the cloud. Well, that's not a risk. That's a technology. That's not even a threat or a vulnerability. You really have to understand what the risks are to your organization. And I think people don't really take enough time to figure that out. So it doesn't matter how much technology you have, what the solutions are. If you're not tying it back to the risks that actually affect your organization, then you're not going to be able to measure it very well.
Yeah. And I think that the likelihood of an event unfolding in a specific way is so hard to measure. And I'm sure, you know, like at Equifax, for example, like what's the likelihood that someone would find this internal application and they would be like, but that stuff is so hard to measure. How do you, in your organization, Alex, measure like the likelihood that an event would occur and impact some business function, for example?
Yeah, I think it's not easy, right? And I think that's why a lot of people shy away from figuring out what their risks actually are, is it's not trivial to figure out that stuff. But one of the other things is, I don't think you have to always be as precise as people think you do. You know, you look at some of the risk assessment frameworks, risk management frameworks that are out there, things like FAIR, and their guidance is, you know, looking at the likelihood. All right, well, let's figure out a range. What's the range of likelihood? You know, no one's ever going to be able to say this is, you know, 11.73% likely that it's going to happen. But based on, you know, historical data, based on, you know, the threats that are out there and changes we're seeing in the threat environment, you know, the amount of vulnerabilities that you have and the types of vulnerabilities that you have, you know, I think that you can come up with a pretty decent range of how likely you think something might be. Obviously, the more data that you can get, the smaller that you can make that range, and the more precise your measurements end up coming out. But you know, I think it's a bit of an excuse also that people, they just don't want to put the time in to figure that out. They'd much rather just sort of, you know, pull something out of the air and say, yeah, well, you know, it's probably 50% likely. Sure, 50%. Let's go with that. And then you end up with bad measurements, and it's really not helping you that much.
Yeah, and I agree. And I also think that there's a certain level of communication on when you do have that data that needs to come together. And I'm kind of thinking of a parallel to like the likelihood of a terrorist attack, right? And I think the worst possible scenario is when people have pockets of information, as has happened in the past in the U.S., and aren't sharing that information to really come up with what's the risk and the likelihood. So what ways are you communicating that when you collect that data?
Yeah, so you know, we're a member of FS-ISAC, for example. So I think ISACs are a great vehicle not only to get that information, you know, into your organization, but also, you know, there's sharing methods through FS-ISAC. I'm also an InfraGuard member here in Denver. That's a great way to get and share some of that information. You know, of course, there's also, you know, pay services that you can work with for threat intelligence to figure out what exactly is going on out there. But I think that the ISACs are underutilized, even though that they're pretty prevalent these days. There's an ISAC for just about every sort of sector that's out there. Mm. I definitely think it's worth getting involved with those, sharing information, getting information. Really great way to do that.
I agree. The ISACs are definitely the most relevant information to your business, whereas the other feeds, there's either a ton of overlap or zero overlap. And who knows if you have that in your environment or not. But an industry-specific one, what people tell me is that that's very a lot more useful to the organization.
But, I mean, that takes work too, right?
Yeah.
So you can't just become a member and then have everything solved for you. Mm-hmm. You have to contribute too. And, you know, you know, even on the local level, just being part of your security community, getting out to events, talking to people, getting a network, you know, of folks that you know that you can talk to and get information from, I think is really important. And that's, you know, one of the things that we've tried to build here in Colorado is a great security community that can help each other and share information and share ideas.
Yeah, I think it's important as you threat model, right, your organization to have those insights into what's happening specifically in your industry is a crucial piece of information. But like you said, it's just one piece of the puzzle, right?
Exactly.
Matt, sorry, I interjected there.
No, you're fine. Alex, any advice for aspiring CISOs that you can provide?
So I think that the biggest thing is understand how your business works and be purposeful about figuring that out. I think a lot of times people take for granted what it is that they do and how that their business makes money. Because really, at the end of the day, again, tying it back to risk, we want to figure out what the risks are and try and reduce those to an acceptable level. But risk is not a bad thing. You want to, without having some sort of risk, then you're not going to be able to capitalize and make money, right? So you're taking some risk running your organization. So figure out those processes that you have that actually make you money, and figure out, you know, where in those there could be some risk. And if there are some that are true risks to those functions happening, that's where you want to start, you know, focusing your controls and your efforts to try and lower that risk. I think also just in general, getting out and talking to people. Again, you know, IT folks, we like to sit behind a keyboard and just do whatever it is that we have to do. Get out, talk to people, make relationships, figure out what's going on in your community, in your organization. That's how you're going to get not only a lot of good information, but that's how you're probably going to get your next job too, is just knowing people. I think it's super important.
Yeah, the network is powerful. Also, just quickly, do a quick plug for Colorado Equals Security, so anybody in Colorado listening can know where to get some more local security news.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. I appreciate that. So Rob Reck, who is the CISO for Ping Identity, and I started Colorado Equals Security a little over a year and a half ago. You know, we had both been involved with ISSA here locally in Denver, and we realized that there were all these great communities of security in Colorado, and we wanted to try and tie all of that together. So really, we started Colorado Equals Security just to talk about how great everything around the security community is here in Colorado, whether that's startups, whether that's organizations, whether that's the people itself. And so, you know, we did a couple things. We started a website to sort of do a consolidated event calendar and some other things. That's at colorado-security.com. And we also started a podcast. So every week we have a podcast with sort of two segments. One is a news segment, and then we interview somebody. So, we talk about the local Colorado security news, jobs, events that are coming up. And then we interview, it might be a founder of a startup. It might be someone here locally in the community, or it might be another security leader here. Colorado, and it's been going great. We also have I think probably the most unexpected and best thing is we started a community Slack channel, and really the only requirement is, you know, you're in Colorado and you're interested in information security. And, you know, we've built that up to nearly 700 people just hanging out, talking on Slack about security and what's been going on in Colorado. So that's been really fun. So I'd encourage everyone, if you have more information or want more information, to check out colorado-security.com.
Yeah, it's you interviewed me, like I said, I think last year, and I think it's great for the local community. Colorado's got a pretty vibrant security scene, lots of startups in the area. I have a number of advisory clients here that still locally, that it's always good to stay connected into the community. Alex, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be back on Business Security Weekly after a break.
Thanks, guys.
If you are interested in quality over quantity and having meaningful conversations instead of just a badge scan, join us April 1st to 3rd at Disney's Contemporary Resort for InfoSec World 2019, where you can connect and network with like-minded individuals in search of actionable information. Use the registration code OS19-SECWEEK for 15% off the main conference or World Pass. Also, check out our on-demand material. Some of our previously recorded webcasts are now available on demand at securityweekly.com/on-demand. All right, welcome back, everyone. All right, Paul, so we should probably start with our quick announcement news on Business Security Weekly. We did it on Enterprise Security last week and Pulse Security Weekly. So you want to give everybody a quick update?
Yeah, so you may have seen the announcement. Matt Alderman has accepted the position, is now actively working as the CEO for Security Weekly. I think that the next logical question was, what's happening to Paul? I'm still here. I'm the CTO. And it's really that I like to think of it as like a yin and yang kind of thing, right? Matt's going to focus on the security industry and business side, and I'm going to focus on the technology and security community side. That doesn't mean that we don't cross paths or meet somewhere in between, as Matt covers shows and some of the technical stuff, and I cover some of the business and sales call stuff, but I needed more of me, right? Someone to cover and divide and conquer in those two areas. As we grow and expand, the number of briefings that we're taking, the number of slots that we have to fill across all of our shows, and the number of sales leads that we are now actually for the first time reaching out, doing outbound like marketing and sales stuff, which has never really happened before. But you know, we've got a lot of slots to fill across a network of shows, so it requires that you know, independent focus. I've got a lot of really cool projects that I'm working on for both our internal technology, in addition to some projects that, you know, will be featured on shows and in presentations. So it's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting. And you know, Michael's still going to be coming on, join us for the show. I mean, he did a fantastic job getting the show off the ground. You know, he's had a lot of items this summer. You know, he missed a number of shows. He was evacuated for one of the hurricanes. So right. Michael will be around. But
To an extent, you know, we're victims of our own success, which is a good thing. You know, as Michael said, he's like, dude, I'm just busy, right? And that's good. I mean, that's the goal for all of us that work together, right? Is that we get busy, almost related to our, you know, article number one. You know, you get so busy and your roles have to change. And that's really what happened. Of course, Michael's still engaged as a host on Security Weekly and providing valuable feedback, direction, and advice for all of our shows and all of the things that we're doing here at Security Weekly, much like our other hosts do as well. But I think it was important that, you know, as we mature as Security Weekly and we do things like taking on briefings is a big undertaking. And I don't take it, none of us take it lightly, right? Anytime we take our time and the vendor's time to learn what they do, we want to make sure that everyone benefits from that, right? That the vendor, that we benefit, the vendor benefits, and our audience benefits as well. And so that's the goal of that. Plus, it allows us to track the industry more closely. As many of us realize, it's really hard to understand who the players are in a particular space and what things everyone does really well and what the differentiators are between them. And so we're hoping to play an even more active role in that on shows like this and other shows on the network. I don't want that to take away from the leadership and communications that we have on this show, which I think is very pertinent to the CISO audience, but also the feedback we've been receiving. And as I look at the data, the all the roles in security also listen to this show, which, thank you, that's awesome, because they want to grow and mature in their careers as well. It's a win all around, and that's why I like the, I think the focus on leadership and communication is important, especially for any type of role in security. And I also think innovation, that is still going to be a part of this show, certainly. And you may see more of that mix in with Enterprise Security Weekly. I don't think our audience and feedback so far feels strongly like which show. So, you know, we might mix it up for a little while until we find a groove, as there were announcements for some acquisitions and funding, I believe. I don't know acquisition-wise, but I did see some funding announcements, which we'll likely cover on Wednesday on Enterprise Security Weekly.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we can stay focused on some of the leadership communication aspects on this show, leave more of the weekly investment news in Enterprise Security Weekly. We've toyed with, and it's something I want to do more on a quarterly basis, is kind of look at the market from a security funding IPO stock perspective, maybe once a quarter on this show, just as kind of a summary, and leave the weekly news on funding maybe over on Enterprise Security Weekly. Obviously, any of the listeners who have suggestions, I would love to hear them as we kind of think about how best to get the information out on the different shows and making sure we're maximizing that information into the right audiences.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I like your story, number one. You know, when getting fired is good for your career. I can't necessarily say that I've been fired all that often, maybe never, but I've left on my own accord, probably, when I realized that things just weren't working out. I'd also kind of throw that in the same bucket of like getting fired. Like, essentially, what I thought I was going to do was not what I was being tasked with to do, and there was a mismatch, and I was like, I gotta get out. And that can be really good for your career, but it's a double-edged sword too. You know, use that time to refocus and shift your career. But I think, you know, that article was really good, Matt.
Yeah, it talks about, you know, 45% have had a major hiccup in their career, being fired, losing a deal, blowing an acquisition, but yet 78% of them still came into this, you know, came into a CEO role. And I think the most pertinent story to me is when MRK decided to get rid of me and the parts of the security team back in 2003. Brendan, my youngest, was, I think he was like a week old.
Mm. And I was there too. My job. That's really funny you say that, Matt, because my son was maybe a month old when I left that particular job I was talking about, where it just wasn't the right fit. Yeah.
Right. And in this case, my job was eliminated. And, yep, you know, I kind of sat back and I said, well, I could go do this for another company. I ended up going on my own. That's when I got into the GRC space. That was a shift in my career.
Yep.
Where I went in and ran third-party vendor management for one of the large banks in Cleveland. It gave me the ultimate idea to build Control Path, which was my startup. And so sometimes that's good, right? It makes you kind of refocus and decide where you want to take your career.
And in my case, you know, I got that life-changing phone call from Ron Gula. So, I mean, you know,
right?
Not that I recommend that, you know, you take such bold actions all the time, but I really love the quote. You know, success is about going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm. And you know, you got to realize that stuff happens for a reason most of the time. And you can make good on that, right? It's a time to reflect and pivot. So,
and it can be very good for your career. It gave me the opportunity to start a company, run a company. Yeah, it didn't end the way I wanted it to, but then I went to Qualys and RSA and Tenable, and now I'm here. It all of these events in your career can allow you to change and end up where you want to end up. And so, you know, use those to the positive, not to the negative, I think is what I wanted to get out of that story.
Absolutely.
Now, there's a few on goals in this story, and so we can kind of maybe intermix these together, but I thought the first one was, you don't need a goal, you need a theme, right? And I think what was interesting here is goals exert pressure on you to get them done, but then once they're done, they disappear. Now what, right? And where with a theme, it kind of gives you a direction. So you don't have to, you know, worry about solving the goal specifically and then, okay, well, what's my next goal? A theme gives you direction. And so this article talks about not setting necessarily goals, but setting a theme of what you want to do in your career.
I think it's awesome because one of the things that even I struggle with to this day is you confuse a goal with an objective, right? And it's good to have multiple objectives that lead up to a goal. And that more is like a story or a narrative that you're talking about, right? In your when you embark on a journey. And I think oftentimes we confuse objectives with goals. It was actually Josh Wright, you know, early on, and he did the note card exercise, which I really like. And I encourage our audience to do this exercise, and we can probably put some more color around it in upcoming episodes. Basically, you take 5 note cards and you write down 5 goals, right? A goal on each one. Now, the first time you do this, and I suggest doing this as a group, right? The first time you do this, if you have the right leader and coach in this exercise, what you're going to realize is that you've probably written down some either objectives on those cards or goals that need further refinement, right? A goal should be something much, much higher up in the spectrum of things, right? And then you have objectives to reach them, as Matt was describing. So I thought that was a really great exercise to do.
And the other one here is, I've always heard this saying, a goal without a timeline is just a dream. You have to set a time frame for that as well.
Yeah, otherwise, I think we did for the cards. I think I set 5 years. 5 years. Because I started to do that with my employees as well. Yeah.
And so that one tied into an article on goals specifically and what's missing. And it talks about two major things. It kind of identified two, not one. One was kind of the process, which you just talked to. But the second one is, it talks about you, right? You really kind of stepping back and taking a look, a holistic look at yourself, and really figuring out, you know, the you portion of the goal setting. Sometimes we forget about what is it that we want, not necessarily what my boss wants or what the company wants. Kind of step back sometimes and think about goals from your perspective, not an external perspective. And so this article kind of got into some of the nuances of that, talks process a little bit of how to set realistic goals. But I do like that concept of a theme of kind of knowing which direction you're heading.
Absolutely.
All right. The next one was the simple yet powerful weekly planning routine puts you in control. And this talks about just those people that are really good at executing on their schedules. And so it kind of goes through a number of items here on how best to prepare yourself. And the first one, which is interesting because I was kind of doing this yesterday, is plan your week ahead on Sundays. Not what your wife wants to hear on Sundays.
Nope.
Is that you're working. But my Mondays are crazy. Mm-hmm. Now with what we have with the show and prep for the show and some of our calls and
welcome to our world
stuff I have. Exactly. And it just helps me, you know, kind of over the weekend just to kind of go, okay, here's what's coming on Monday. So I'm a little prepared. Number two is understand your tasks and your workflow. So understand, you know, kind of what things you have to get done in what order is part of your flow. We're going through this a lot with HubSpot right now internally. Mm-hmm. You know, you wake up on a Monday morning, you have all these to-dos in your inbox. You're like, holy cow.
Yeah, I assigned a bunch of those to you.
I know you did.
Yeah, I still have my fair share of to-dos in HubSpot. And we've talked about that. I really like HubSpot. The way that it orient, and for me, this was a new kind of way to orient tasks. Now, HubSpot is very sales oriented for those out there that, you know, may not be familiar with it. I, in the past, have used various methods to track that. You know, I think a typical kind of progression, right, is you use spreadsheets and email. Then we gravitated to a Google kind of add-on called Insightly to do that. And that quickly, you know, ran out of its usefulness. And then we found HubSpot, and I was like, the thing for me along this topic of, you know, doing your weekly planning was constant reminders about a specific task thread. And in the sales process and other processes that we have, or you might have, right, there's a certain amount of follow-up, right? Like, I need to do one thing today, and then based on either a response or other actions that may or may not occur, in 3 to 5 or some X number of days after that, I need to be reminded to go look at that again and either do the next step in the task or re-follow up. So in HubSpot for sales, it's really obvious how that comes together, right? My initial email to someone may be, I think they'd make a really good sponsor for Security Weekly based on, you know, our criteria. And the technology they have is cool, right? We spend a lot of time figuring out who's got the coolest technology. Okay, let me reach out to that person, and that's my first contact. HubSpot automatically says, create a reminder, or you can automate to say, create a reminder for me X number of days in the future. What's nice about that, Matt, is I can kind of forget about it and move on to the next one. So your brain, and I think a lot of what these articles typically talk about is, you know, that confusion and chaos in your brain, it helped alleviate a lot of that. I didn't have to worry about it. And it took me a while to trust the system that in 3 to 5 days or whatever, I would get a reminder to follow up so it never falls off the face of the earth, which is what typically happens when I try and track my tasks. So I liked that. However, it's very specific to sales in this case. I'd almost like to find a way to recreate that in some other system, which I'm sure exists. For me, in the way that I work, I really like that way of kind of organizing tasks and planning.
that's how you kind of used to use reminders back in the day and Outlook, right? And
yep.
This creates that reminder system. And that ties in a little bit to number three, which is protect time for things that will push you forward towards your goals. And it's identifying blocks of time that you just need to focus, mm-hmm. right? And just block that time out. We get so transactional, you and me, especially now, where you've got briefings and we've got prep calls and we've got sales calls. And sometimes you just get inundated with all the activity that you don't block out the time to really think about, okay, what are the other things we have to get done?
How do I actually
improve operational efficiency? And
How do I get work done? And this was, it took my wife a while to realize this as well. And things will get better now that there's, you know, two of us that are able to take on a lot of these roles, which was one of the reasons why Matt and I joined forces, right? Is that during the day, like you said, like I may have sales call, briefing call, I do block off my show prep time and then actual show time, right? And then, you know, spending time with employees, making sure they're on their way to doing, you know, their tasks and answering any questions. As, you know, many of us, you may realize for Security Weekly that there's people that work and run the business, but they don't have the 15 years of experience in security. Now, they've all come a long way and a huge eye-opening experience on security, but they need to ask us questions as the experts to fill out topics, right? So then my day is filled with that stuff. And, you know, it's like 10 o'clock at night. And I'm like, I got to go back to work. She's like, what? You worked all day. I'm like, no, that's a different kind of work, right? And I think these articles are great in having you realize the different types of work to be able to schedule those accordingly. And my advice is to match that with your own kind of appetite for when certain types of work gets done. And I know that certain types of work are better suited to, you know, 10 o'clock at night or after, and other types of work are 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. And then there's a type of work that happens during the day. Balancing all of that, I think, is one of the keys really to success, is knowing yourself and when you work best and applying those different types of work.
Yeah, and that all ties into use your calendar as your main productivity tool. I cannot survive without my calendar. Everything's there. I wouldn't know where I'm supposed to go without my calendar.
And I tell you what, over the past couple of years, I started using the automatic calendar system, which I don't know how I ever lived without that, right? We've experimented with Calendly, as well as HubSpot has a system where basically you give people a link and they can schedule some time with you. Now, on the back end, you've got to make sure you've scheduled your different work types so that, you know, people aren't scheduling meetings when you're trying to do a certain type of work. But that's been, and Michael was big on this. As he does a lot of advisory work, right, he would have blocks of time where this is where people can schedule this type of meeting with me. And those type of systems are so awesome. And I think that also, as technology people, when we all work together, we're getting more accustomed to getting a meeting link for someone. In the beginning, when I first started using it, people didn't use it as much as they do now, I believe. And I think we're more accustomed. People aren't as put off when I say, yeah, just book some time with me, right?
Agreed. All right. Let's go to, I love this IDC article on CIOs who don't empower IT teams to disrupt, scale, and innovate will fail. And I like this article because this was part of our strategy work back in 2015 around Tenable about not only the future of security, but the future of technology. And in this article, it makes some interesting predictions that I kind of talked about back then, which is the CIO's role is going to shift. And just so you guys all understand, when the CIO's role shifts, the CISO's role will shift with it, right? This is not isolated to the IT industry, and that they have to be more aligned with the business, that their compensation will come through cost cutting, alignment of the business, growth on the business side, right? The CIO is going to be a technology enabler for the business. And that means CISOs who report into CIOs will also have some shift, I think, also in their role on away from some of the operational components, but also figuring out how to deal with risk reduction and other things in those environments. I thought this was a really interesting article because I think we're going to continue to see that shift of both the IT and the security executives being much more aligned and much more compensated based on the success of the business.
Yeah, I think that's interesting as I look at my new role now is I also wear the CIO hat in some respects as well to drive the IT behind the shows, right, which is very technology driven. And I think this article is correct. If you're not looking to, I mean, disrupt is an overused word, but scale and innovate is really where your focus needs to be. And you're right, Matt, security needs to be behind that 110% to make sure that you're allowing scalability and innovation, but also adding in so that you can do it securely and not, again, being that department of no.
Exactly. And Alex talked about this in the last segment a little bit, is that risk management process. Without some risk, you're limiting opportunity and growth. And so you have to understand that balance. And that means from a security perspective, we got to understand where the business wants to go and figure out how to reduce risk in those growth opportunities. Just like the CIOs have to kind of align to bringing in technologies and processes that allow them to continue to scale and innovate.
And I really think that this is off the cuff, but the, you know, number of different attacks and number of different assets that you have is so hard to track today. So like, how do I know as we adopt new technology as an organization, where all the different gaps might be and how they might be exploited is just, and I think that's what one of the things that's going to solidify the CISO as a role is constantly trying to get a handle on that. And I think about, you know, John Strand has a webcast, and this is actually a topic that I'm going to be working on. How do I understand my external threats and map those and get those down to some type of action that someone can take and on an ongoing basis do that? In other words, as we spin up new websites and domain names and certificates and all of this new technology, how do I have something that's constantly checking that, right? There's a lot of open source tools to do that. There's a lot of vendors that claim to do that as well to different, in different takes, different points of view on that problem. But I think that's one of the most challenging things today. And I think it kind of likens it back to what Alex said when you ask people what their most challenging thing is and they say cloud. I think that's a piece of it, right? Is because of the way we're implementing technology today, how do we keep tabs on our exposures moving forward? And it's not just about, I mean, you and I worked at Tenable, right? It's not just about vulnerability management. That's also a small piece of it as well. It's managing your exposures that I think is probably the number one challenge, right? At a high level.
Yeah, it is. And again, this ties into this whole concept of metrics and mapping and risk management, which now ties me into the next article, which is why aligning IT with business goals is the key mantra, right? If we don't understand what the business is trying to accomplish, then it's really hard to set not only IT goals, but also security goals. I used to do a presentation on metrics when I was at Tenable, actually, and it talked about how do you map your different security metrics to business goals. And I would give some high-level examples. You know, if one of my business goals is to improve customer retention, then things like protecting customer data is important, right? Because if there's a breach and you lose trust with a customer, then I might not retain them as a customer, right? That's a very valid business goal. Well, that means I have to have certain controls in place from an IT and security perspective to protect customer data, because a breach of that data could maybe not allow me to retain them as a customer, right? And so there's aspects of these simple alignment techniques that you can use to say, once I understand the business goals, now I can align a set of security controls and metrics to actually track in the board meetings, actually report on how you're helping achieve those business goals. And I think that's really important.
But that's a great example, because I think what's awesome is it allows IT and security to get ahead of it. If you know that that's a future goal for the company, you can, where IT and security can work together and say, well, in support of customer retention, we need to encrypt customer data. And maybe we have some specific storage solution that allows us to do that. But then you have to think data needs to be shared, right? So then we need to have a solution that allows people to share data more securely, be implementing those projects in support of those specific goals. That could incorporate technology you already have. It probably is going to incorporate some new technology, but getting ahead of it is the key.
Yes. And you start at the business and you work your way down. Mm-hmm. Those goals are what the business is trying to do to hit the revenue targets, their growth targets, everything. So that's where you should start. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I got a couple more in here, but I wanted to touch on this using experiments to launch products. And it talks about a couple use cases with Uber and Airbnb on some different ways to experiment on launching these new products. But they also give you some very interesting tips on how to get ready to do this and then analyze the data, which I thought was interesting, because I think sometimes we do the same things to launch a product. And are those the most effective way to get the word out and to get feedback on new products as they launch into the market? So I was kind of digging into this article a bit on this one.
Yeah, and that can be an interesting one. You know, typically when I talk to others in a similar role in security, right, we're probably not, in many cases, we're not the ones actually coding the entire solution and launching it. Oftentimes we'll prototype it, but how do you get feedback on that prototype and then hand it off to actual software engineers that are going to engineer a product, right? And having that test, as some of the examples in here with Uber, and doing that effectively is certainly something that, you know, I need to research more as well.
Yeah, in here it gives you kind of four main things to think about. You know, decide on which metrics you want to use and then come up with the hypothesis, right? So think about what you're expecting, then choose a random subset of markets to launch, then make sure you track not only whether the product is working, but how its launch affects existing products. Did you see an uptick in existing products because of the announcement or the launch of that product? And then the final tip here was make sure you understand why your product is succeeding or failing, right? And that will help drive your product roadmap and then also potentially additional enhancements and things that you want to roll out to the market.
Well, that's why you need Danalytics. That's our internal term for Dan Wheatley from Straight Talk, who's been working with us over the course of this year. He was actually featured on a Business Security Weekly episode, maybe when it was Startup Security Weekly last year. In any case, we hired Dan, and you know, one of Dan's roles primarily is helping us collect and analyze the metrics for a lot of different things that we do. And doing so well that he earned the nickname Danalytics, and is actually working with some companies in security now as well as a result. But it really, you know, this year made me think about metrics. And I think a lot of people just want to collect data, and that's one step. But analyzing it and making the right decisions off of it is a whole art in and of itself, an art and a science, right? Episode 79 is where Dan was featured. Yes.
Yep. And you apply it to everything. Products, launches, solutions, our own shows.
And internal metrics that, you know, we were referencing in the interview with Alex, right? I mean, there's a whole metrics conference and what are the right metrics? It's why I asked Alex, like, what metrics, you know, work to measure your programs? And I think that's going to be a continuing trend we're going to talk about for a while, as I see more categories emerging that are really looking to provide us with metrics. Now, they provide us with some really cool security stuff too, but you got to be able to take those metrics from it, right, and apply those correctly. I think attack simulation and third-party risk management, right? I mean, they're all about really metrics about your security program or someone else's security program.
Yep, exactly right. We'll do more on metrics later. We should do a whole segment on metrics at some point. I have to dust off that old presentation and pull out some examples.
Right, because I think it's changed. I mean, we used to talk about very basic metrics, and I think a lot of those are still applicable, but, you know, tides have shifted in so many technology fronts that, you know, you might have some different metrics. And metrics about where you don't have visibility are just equally as important as the ones that you may have visibility on. Like, not having metrics is a metric in and of itself.
True. Were there any others you wanted to cover? Those were the main ones for me for today.
Yeah, no, I liked those. I think losing sales opportunities is an interesting one.
Sales as a whole. Yeah, that's the one that's on my screen right now. is it sales execution or is it product insufficiency, which is always an interesting one.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that also relates to internal projects as well. And certainly I've been part of very successful projects and projects that were just huge failures. And I think that the metrics you need behind them is to understand why, you know, and I think that's what this article is getting at, right? Was it the execution? In the case of internal, it's slightly different, right? And speaking of a particular experience I had where I tried to bring a technology in-house and it just wasn't the right fit. Now, was it that we had different problems and challenges that the vendor wasn't able to overcome? Or was it a good match on the surface, but the vendor really didn't provide great solutions in those areas? Or were there other deficiencies internally that we had to address before we should even think about adopting, you know, that technology? In other words, we weren't ready for that technology. And I think those are all interesting things to consider, hopefully find before you try and, you know, evaluate and implement a particular project. But I think those mismatches often lead to, and I know a lot of people are sitting out there and they know exactly which product and project this is in your organization. We bought something, we implemented it, and now it kind of just sits on the shelf and someone checks in on it once a month and it's not providing a lot of value. How do we avoid that? Of course, that's applicable to an external sales process, but think about how you adopt technology to solve security problems.
Yeah, the one I wanted to add to this article was, you know, sales execution, product insufficiency, or marketing, right? Because marketing's the other piece in this equation. Because if you're marketing the wrong things to the wrong people, it could limit sales. It could be because the product's insufficient and you're trying to drive opportunities, you know,
product market fit. I mean, we talk about product market fit all the time in a lot of different scenarios. That's like the number one thing. Yeah. I mean, I think when you come to market, you really have to nail that. And it's not easy. Right? I mean, we see it on Shark Tank all the time where they've come up with something great and you can have the best technology and product in the world, but you're not making that right fit to the right audience in the right way.
Right. And that can really impact sales opportunities if you're trying to market the wrong product to the wrong audience.
Yep. Yeah. It can make your sales process really long. And it shouldn't be that long, right? If you've got the right fit, it should be a much shorter sales cycle. And that relates internally as well. If you're trying to push this particular technology and project to solve a problem and it's taking forever, you might need to take a step back and be like, maybe I just don't have the right fit. Awesome.
That is true.
Very cool.
All right. With that, I think we're a wrap.
Oh, thank you. One thing. Sorry. Before we end, we're going to talk about this in Enterprise Security Weekly, but I wanted to mention it quick. It is now public because it's on Javelin Network's website. Javelin has been acquired by Symantec, and that did become public today. It's interesting how it hasn't hit some of my other feeds where I get notified about stuff like that. But I did check the Javelin website and it is there. Congratulations to all of our friends at Javelin. In fact, Eyal Nemani will be on Paul Security Weekly doing a technical segment this week on Thursday. Really, really cool stuff. Obviously, you know, from Javelin, there's a fantastic team there. And they've been acquired by Symantec, which is great. This is awesome. We were talking about teasing two of our sponsors. we're having successful exits. The timing was just a little off on the announcements. Of course, Matt was working at Layered Insight. They were acquired by Qualys. And now Javelin has been acquired by Symantec, which is awesome for me. It's just personally gratifying that we've worked with these companies and helped them go to successful exit and that we work with technology vendors that can have successful exits in our, you know, larger companies are interested in acquiring them. It solidifies that our process for selecting sponsors has some merit to it, obviously.
Yeah, two sponsors in 2 weeks. That's success. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, now we're going to wrap up.
Now we're going to wrap up. Sorry.
Now we'll see you next week on Business Security Weekly.